All right, I will. I'm not used to that. Usually there's something going on before this. Morning, everybody. All right, let's see here. Okay, we're there. Daylight savings, a little sparse in here. Some people probably didn't put their clocks forward. Thank God the teacher didn't do that. And it's been nice. I didn't have to pray today that people wouldn't wreck on the way to CT. I mean, you don't have the snow falling. That's nice. All right. Let me open up with prayer. Lord, I just want to just invite you in today to this meeting. I just thank you for everyone that did get up and come out today and get before you. It's just such a privilege to just get before you and think about your ways, Lord. Sometimes it's so hard in our lives. It seems that we're so busy, and just thank you that we made that effort to do that. Pray that that is fruitful today, that you do give us some encouraging stuff in your word, but also just stuff that we can understand and get to a better place with our relationship with you and with other brothers and sisters in Christ. So I pray that in your name, amen. All right. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. Right? Popular saying in our culture today. And I've done this before, you know, because I see these types of sayings that, and you kind of ask your question, you know, you ask yourself, is that in the Bible? You know, it kind of sounds like it, but you're not really sure, right? You ask yourself that, did God really say this? Or, you know, is this some sort of human proverb or some variation maybe? You know, for example, you hear the phrases, God helps those who help themselves. You've heard that before. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Money is the root of all evil, all of which are not in the Bible. But people will claim it. They'll say it like it is, and you got to think to yourself, is that in there or not? You know? And this particular saying is in the Bible. In fact, it is in Matthew 7:12. It's in part of our teaching today. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. It sounds pretty important, doesn't it? And interesting enough, as famous as this quote is, this section that we're going to be looking at today has quite a few one-liners, if you will, that even our culture, non-Christian and Christian alike, just kind of spout off. They've either heard them before, they know them, they use them in regular, you know, everyday conversation, most of the time out of context, not really knowing what they mean. But nonetheless, pretty famous. Like these, this is what we're going to be looking at, some of them. Seek and you'll find. Judge not, lest you be judged. Cast not your pearls before swine. I've heard that before. Knock and the door will be opened. Take the plank out of your own eye. And all these are going to come up, and all of these are somewhat popular, even in secular society, right? But I believe a lot of people, in fact, even Christians, probably can't exactly say what these phrases mean, or where they even came from. Are they in the Bible? Used out of context. And I think it's sad because if you really understood this in context, like we're going to try and learn today, how they intertwine, how they interact with each other, there's a lot of awesome principles that Jesus tries to give us in this section that we can use in everyday relating with our close relationships, even our casual relationships. So we're going to be talking about relationships a lot today, you know, our spouse, our family, our friends, our coworkers. And hopefully we'll see that there are a lot of pitfalls, relational pitfalls that can be avoided if we just follow some of these basic principles. So we're in Matthew 7, if you want to turn there today. We're starting the last chapter of a three-chapter series that we've been in now, looking at for the last several weeks, and popularly known as the Sermon on the Mount, if you've been here. Jesus, you know, giving this to his followers, giving these instructions. A great series so far. Awesome teachings. You know, I think next week we hit the back half of this chapter. And if you've missed any of the teachings, you can get these on our website. We do put them on there. You can listen to them directly, download them onto your iPod or onto your phone. A lot of times that's how I do it, and then play it on my car radio. They're free, so no worries there. And so let's read. It says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." And this is probably the most famous of the phrases that we're going to look at today. At least you could argue that point. Probably the most misunderstood. And on top of that, probably the most important to get right, to understand, so that you understand the context of the rest of today. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. This is kind of thrown around a lot in our society, right? Non-Christians and Christians alike, non-Christians will throw this, use this against us Christians to get us off their back a lot of times, and sometimes with good reason. And we'll get into that. But the first thing I want to debunk is that, you know, people, Christians, non-Christians alike, when we hear this, almost immediately conclude that this is talking about God's judgment, right? You know, that you know, we think of the Bible, we think of Jesus, we think of God, we think of his character, judgment, and I think it's an easy pitfall or an easy pit to fall into. And kind of like this: do not judge, or God will judge you. And that's not what it says. And I understand the inclination to think of it like that, to look at it this way, but it's not what, you know, it's not there. It's also, though, a great curveball, I think, for a lot of people to dodge a bullet, right? Don't judge me, they say. You know, it's arrogant to judge. Only God can judge. Who are you, right? So not only is it a possible misconception, but it also can be a very convenient thing to look at, you know, by people. You know, whether you're a Christian trying to hide some sin that you're, you know, being questioned about, or you're a non-Christian that just don't want to talk about the right and wrong in this life or in your life. And when it's convenient, we will line right up with our culture on this one, right? Our culture is really big into this. You know, you have your world, I have my world, let's keep it that way. You know, don't question me, I won't question you. You know, that sounds fair. Convenient. And believe it or not, Jesus, to some degree, agrees with this notion. Who are you on your own behalf to tell somebody what's right or wrong? How do you know what somebody's thinking? How do you know what her motives are or what's on his heart? But a lot of times, I think we assume that rule pretty easily when we're relating to people. We like to think that we know the motives and the people's hearts, what they're thinking. We like to play judge and jury with other people's lives, just the way we relate a lot of times. But that's God's rule. They're right on this when they say it sometimes. Another passage says this very clearly, James 4:12. If we bring that in, it says, "There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy." That would be God. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? 1 Corinthians 4:5, I didn't put it up, but he says, "He," or God, "you know, will bring to light what is hidden in the darkness and will expose the motives of the heart." That's not your rule in this world. It's his rule. It's God's rule. And so on one level, again, Jesus would agree on that notion. Who are you to judge me? But where our culture gets it wrong, where we often, or a lot of us get it wrong, is that this passage in Matthew here is not talking about God judging. It's talking about a certain type of judgment. It's actually a warning here by Jesus to his followers. Practical in nature, believe it or not, you know, he said, don't become a self-righteous judge in this world. Don't take on my role, he's saying. Because the way you judge others, others are going to judge you back with the same measure a lot of times. It's actually talking about a human relational tendency that we have a definition for, which is called reciprocity, right? It's not an absolute law, but it is a strong tendency in human behavior that's been studied and well known, really. It simply means, you know, the practice of exchanging things with others for mutual benefit. Countries do this all the time, right? In their alliances and their negotiations. I'll do this for you, you do this for me, you know, and we'll all get along. And when it comes to human behavior, and specifically relating to each other, this tendency also seems to apply. We as human beings, you know, have a strong tendency to respond in kind, behavior-wise, the way some way another engages us. You know, whether someone treats us fair or unfairly, you know, if someone gives you something, you tend to, you know, give something back similar or in kind. You know, you send me Christmas cards, I'll send you Christmas cards. I don't send Christmas cards, so sorry about that. It's probably a bad analogy there, but you know, but when we burrow down into this word or this concept a little bit, we find that there is such a thing as negative reciprocity, right? If you treat me unfairly, I am going to have a tendency to treat you back unfairly. We see this in relationships all the time, right? The spouse, you know, gripes and complains about, you know, something usually meaningless, the cap on the toothpaste, the cupboard door is shut, put the lid down, or put the seat down, I guess. And at first chance, what happens, right? The other responds in kind, starts nitpicking at the other, right? Something, you know, looks at something that the other's doing and gripes and complains about it. Probably meaningless. We have a tendency to reciprocate. That's probably a more common word that we get out of this. Reciprocate in kind. And it can get ugly pretty quick, right? To the point where we judge each other's motives. We try to judge people's hearts. Can lead to some real dysfunction in our relationships. In fact, sometimes irreparable dysfunction. Divorce, alienation, ruined relationships can often be linked back to this origin of or pattern of negative relating in the relationship. And so this is what Jesus is getting at here. You know, don't start judging people on your own behalf. Don't assume my role, because most likely you're going to be judged back in the same measure. And you're going to just bring grief upon yourself. It'll come back to bite you. And this holds true in all our relationships if you think about it, right? If you have a critical disposition or you have a cynical heart, you're sarcastic in the way you treat other people. Maybe you relate through your temper or berating people. For examples, people will have a tendency to respond in kind. You know, whether the negative relating is obvious or not, whether it's, you know, actually intentional or it's just a pattern that we've fallen into, when we think about it, it's really a self-righteous way of relating to the other person. Think about it, right? If you're hurtful, you're unkind, you're towards another in your relating, you're really taking it upon yourself to determine that that person deserves to be treated that way. You become judge and jury and sometimes executioner in your relationships when you relate that way. It's really a subtle form of self-righteous judgment when you relate. And it's a vicious cycle that we can get into. Now, just as negative reciprocity is just as, you know, you have negative reciprocity, you know, something we want to avoid, obviously, right? We've been learning it. You know, you have such a thing as positive reciprocity. You can use this tendency to your advantage. Because in the same way people respond negatively to negative stimuli, people respond positively to positive stimuli. Jesus actually adds this this in context in a parallel passage. Parallel just means that it's the same topic or conversation, just written by a different author. Luke puts it this way in chapter 6, verse 37 and 38. He says, "Do not judge, and you will not be judged." So we read that, right? "Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, though, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." See the logic here? You treat somebody kind, you treat somebody fair, you encourage somebody, you know, you build somebody up, you forgive somebody, you appreciate people in your life. You show them genuine love, people are going to tend to treat you back in kind, kind of comes back to you. And it's not Eastern karma either. This is really more cause and effect, right? Consequence for your actions. If you do something, something comes back at you. Just makes sense if you think through it. And this is some real practical advice by Jesus to his followers, to us today, right? Warning us about our human tendencies. You know, be careful not to fall into the trap of negative relating. And the practical point for each one of us, if you self-reflect here for a second, right? And if you're looking around to other people, you just missed the point already, right? You just, you know, if you're doing that. This is a vicious cycle. You know, what vicious cycle or cycles do you fall into when relating, you know, that possibly contributes to, you know, the strained relationships in your life or my life, if we put it that way? Let me tell you, if you can pinpoint some of the negative relating that you do and you make some changes, it can go a long way in repairing and restoring some relationships that you might have written off, that you might think are dead and unsavable, just making a kind remark to somebody. Turn negative relating into positive relating. Just give it a try if you're in that boat. And now again, this is a very important point that I want to get back to understand the rest of this passage that sets up the framework of the rest of the passage, is that, again, it's not talking about God's judgment. It's talking about how others will respond to you when you judge them, right? And so if we read on, he says this is kind of famous here. He says, "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye." Now, this can be a little bit confusing here, right? Because we just read, "Do not judge, lest you be judged." And yet this sequence here has some elements of judgment in it, doesn't it? This is all in the context of approaching a brother and sister that's caught up in some probably sin or wrongdoing. And it doesn't say ignore the speck in his eye. He doesn't come to that conclusion. Just simply says to notice the plank that's in your eye before you can see clearly to remove the speck in your brother's eye. And we're going to look at that here in a second. But what's important to realize, you know, from the previous verse that we looked at, is not to conclude that Jesus was telling us never to judge. That's another misconception that comes up. He was just telling us not to self-righteously judge. There's a difference there. God tells us that we need to judge in certain arenas in this life. This is an example. We're going to run into another one in a second, you know, and later and further down in the chapter, verse 15, he talks about judging false prophets. Watch out for false prophets. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that next week. But he says, you know, they come in sheep's clothing and inwardly they're ferocious wolves. And he says, you know, by their fruit, you're going to recognize them. So he's talking about judging their fruit, judging their lives, looking at their lives, seeing what they're doing, to make a call on that. It's a form of judgment. If we get outside the gospel, the Apostle Paul writing to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 5:3 says this, "For my part, even though I'm not physically present, I am with you in spirit as one who is present with you in this way. I've already passed judgment in the name of the Lord Jesus on the one who has been doing this." It's an example of judgment in Scripture. This is in response to hearing about this guy that was sleeping with his father's wife. That's wrong. We can judge that. We can match that to God's word and say, that's wrong. Heck, Paul wasn't even present with these guys and he was making a judgment. So God never tells us never to judge. But the point, you know, that Jesus is describing to us here is kind of how we should exercise judgment. He says, pull the plank out of your own flippant eye before you start looking at your brother, right? Examine your own heart. Realize your own deficiencies first in probably the same areas. I really like this picture, right? The plank eye disease. You know, probably describes some of us, probably more than we want to admit. And have you ever had something in your eye, right? A speck? Of dirt or sawdust, you know, even something small like that, you know, it hurts, right? It hurts, your eye waters, your vision gets blurry. I play softball, I'm looking outside, the weather's getting nice, should be spring training's coming up. And I play third base, and sometimes, I guess, and they call that the hot corner. And because the ball gets to you really quick when the batter hits the ball. And it can be pretty scary sometimes. You have to have some clear vision when you're playing that position. But every once in a while, when the pitcher's just ready to pitch the ball, this piece of dust flies into my eye, and my eye starts watering, and my vision gets blurry, and I start to inwardly panic. Because if that batter hits the ball as hard as he can at me, that could be devastating because that could drill me right in the head. Right? And so it's important to keep your eyes clear, right? So your vision's not blurred in the analogy, because anything in your eye, i.e. your sin, anything, you know, affects your perspective, affects your vision. If you haven't dealt with the issues in your own life, if you're not going to get before God, you know, it kind of bends your perspective as you go to your brother. And we have a tendency to oversize our brother or sister's sin and minimize our own, don't we? Like, look what she did, or he's so out of line. That's so wrong. And yet you're over there doing the same thing. And so the plank analogy here, you know, in our own eye has this humbling effect that helps us gain perspective before we actually go and pop off. Or talk to our brother. But I think the order is probably even more important than the size here. I think we can actually get caught up in the size and of the plank and, you know, the size of the plank in our eye and the smallness of the speck in our brother's eye. The assumption here could be that the plank in my eye is always greater than the speck that's in my brother's eye. And that's not necessarily the case. Your brother or sister could be in some serious sin, comparatively speaking, to what you're into right now. And so it can be pretty bad stuff. So consequently, you know, comparatively speaking. So what's important here, I think, is the sequence. It says here, first examine yourself, then go to your brother. First take the plank out of your eye. Don't quick draw here. That's what that's saying. Get before God, pray about it, you know, get the facts right. relate based on your own, based on your own deficiencies. Look at your own self before God. Prepare yourself before God. Humble yourself before God. Take some time. Look in the Word. See if it matches the Word. Get some counsel on this. A lot of times, it ends right there because you realize it's not even a moral issue. It's probably just something that you don't like. And it would have been a judgment if you went to your brother. Or maybe the facts aren't the way you first heard them. They're not the same way. So do that. But the interesting part here is he says, if you don't do it, Jesus says, if you don't do it this way, he calls you a hypocrite because, again, who are you to judge your brother based on your own righteousness? You need to make sure a lot of times what's right. Wouldn't it be great if we all related this way? I mean, the right way, especially in the friction areas of some of the relationships that we have. Consider our own part in this before we go to our brother. Examine our own hearts, our own sin before popping off. Humbly approach our brother or sister, with their best interest at heart. Instead of a sense of justice or retribution or attack that we're used to seeing. Wouldn't that be great? I think it's something that we all can do here. And I think that we all have a tendency to move in this direction in our lives when we examine it. And what do they say? Awareness is often the first step in restoration if we need improvement here. So it's something to reflect on. Now, the next verse I love, and I'm not going to put it up there yet because I want to set it up, because it speaks to the realness of God in our lives. Life is not cut and dry. I think it's one of the things I love about the Bible. It deals with real life. It deals with our real lives. It's not some pie-in-the-sky platitude. It's not wishful thinking, but it's real-life dealings. And he says this. He says, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. I mean, that's right on the level, right? I mean, does that sound like something God would say? That's what Jesus said. What is that? It's an old school saying. I used to hear it all the time growing up. Some of my family would, spit out these, don't cast your pearls before swine. It sounds redneck to me, actually. Kind of a window in where how I was brought up. But, this is in the Bible. And it might be a little hard to decipher at first. But first of all, I think the first question we got to ask is God calling people pigs and dogs, right? This may take you back a little bit when we think of the goodness of God and the. But again, I would argue, look at it like this: don't you just love the realness here? It's right on our level at some point. And this is the analogy, by the way. It's talking about certain people. It is people. And this is Jesus speaking, and it's a real contrast on what we just read, what we were just talking about, how we should handle conflict and judgment, through self-reflection first. So how does this fit in here? Well, it's reality. God deals with us on a real basis. He knows how brutal this life is. He knows how inconsistent this life can be. Relationships are not cookie cut. No two are exactly the same. Each one has its own dynamics and their own quirks about them. They're hard work and they take time. And what he's saying in a roundabout way here is you only have a limited amount of time. In fact, you don't even know how much time you have on more than one front in relationships. And you're going to come across all kinds of people in this life. You're going to come across all kinds of or different relationships, some by choice, but some by chance. Just through circumstance, you're going to come into a relationship with some people. Some may be good, some may be strained and worth working on. But some are not. They're just bad. Now, he calls on us to love in all situations. He doesn't call on us to condemn. He doesn't call on us to self-righteously judge. We just learned that. But the way we love certain people may not look like the traditional way that we view love. You know, just to briefly define love for a second, you know, the Bible talks about love being the golden rule, right? First Corinthians 13:13. Three things will last forever: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. But the love we're talking about here is, you know, it's not romantic love. It's not just brotherly love. It's not cuddly type of love, you know. It's sacrificial love, laying down your life for others, serving others, teaching others, encouraging others, and correcting others. And other precepts that we could list, you know, the one another passages, if you've ever, you know, got into those. All these things that we should or can and should do according to God for each other. You know, on a sacrificial level. This is instruction in the Bible if you read it. But all these things require time. And time is precious. And when we think of the pearls that he's talking about here, things that are sacred to us, things that we've discovered about God in our own lives, that we deem precious, you know, the knowledge of God, that he actually exists, that's a pearl. The grace of God, the love of God, our relationship with God, things that we hold sacred and we want to impart to other people, thus fulfilling the mission, right, that God has us here for. He says, you know, in several places and in several ways, go into the world and make disciples or followers of him. Reach the lost, he says. And after they become disciples or followers, what's he say? You know, teach them my precepts and my commands and spend time with them doing it. He's calling on us to be wise here. Wise with our time. That's what he's talking about. Think of the analogy, right? Throwing your precious gems or your pearls into the mud trough of the pigs. Precious to you, but the pigs could care less, right? They just tramp all over them. They have no use for them. Don't throw your precious pearls about God, which involves time that you want to impart to people, to the pigs and dogs in your life. You know, this is a further call for us here to evaluate our relationships, right? To identify the dogs and the pigs in our lives. Believe it or not, this is a tough teaching here. Could be something that's challenging. And the quicker the better, it seems, right? And we might have to be making some tough choices in our lives. Now, the dogs and the swine that he's talking about are people that scoff God continuously. Not someone that's just a hard case, not someone that's just, you know, slow to get it. And, you know, there's all talk in the Bible about patience, forbearance, love, you know, don't jump to conclusions, that kind of stuff. You'd want to persevere through that. But these are the people that don't want to hear it continuously. Proverbs 9:7-8 says, whoever corrects a mocker invites insults. Whoever rebukes the wicked incurs abuse. Do not rebuke mockers or they will hate you. Rebuke the wise and they will love you. Again, these are people that don't want to hear it continuously. They pick fights with you, or they want to manipulate your time. They want to just, you know, they're scoffers. And that's the obvious, right? But this also could be the lazy or unmotivated, the foolish, the passive. You know, it doesn't have to be, they don't have to be aggressive. They just have to be time suckers. Proverbs 23:9. Don't speak to fools, for they will scorn your prudent words. And so the dogs and the pigs here are not necessarily unresponsive or combative non-believers. I mean, it could be. But this also could be fellow believers. I mean, that raises an ear here, I would imagine. In fact, in the context, what we just came out of, the idea of pulling the speck out of my brother's eye. I mean, this very well could apply to a disciple that you're discipling, to somebody that you're mentoring, that you're trying to shepherd. You know, and those are all church words, but really what that is that people that you're trying to impart your knowledge about God to them. A true believer could be this person that's lazy or unmotivated to move forward with God. They too can trample under feet your precious pearls. In fact, sometimes that's what tears us up the worst, the most, right? More than anything. I'd rather someone tell me, you know, straight up, I'm not interested. You know, I don't care. Or go to hell and be mean about it. Because I'd rather do that and save the time. But when you invest into people and you put time, sometimes years, and they just turn and walk away. Or they just don't move at all. They just muddle around. This can be really painful. This can tear you up inside. And the quicker we discern who's the real players and who's not can be of great advantage to us. And this is Jesus talking here. It's not me. This is real life. Jesus says to be aware of the relationships in your life and always be evaluating them. Because, you know, sometimes this is tough love that we have to dish out. And sometimes it's to some very close friends that are just not getting it and they're not moving the kingdom forward and they're just off in their own thing. We should always be striving to be moving forward with God in our own lives and with the group that we're in. Jesus himself lived this out, right? Look at some of the examples in the Gospels, right? He, you know, look at the Pharisees. You know, these were the non-believers of his day, right? In the Gospel accounts, the religious foe that always, you know, challenged him at every, opposed him at every corner, questioning Jesus, trying to trip him up, right? Sometimes Jesus would match wits with them and go back and forth. But other times, you know what he would do? He would recognize their ill intentions and he would just kind of slip away, ignore them, right? Twist their questions around a little bit. Sometimes he wouldn't even answer them at all. And then think of his disciples. These would be the believers in his day, people that followed him, you know? At one time, there were hundreds of people following Jesus around the countryside, right? Listening to him, they were committed to him. But when he turned up the heat and he called for a little bit more self-sacrifice, what happened? Most of them fell away. And he didn't go chasing after them because he had a mission and he only had a certain amount of time to get it done. I mean, so this could be hard for some of us, and I understand that, to consider and to get our minds around. But the deal here is, you know, the concept here is don't be the rescuer. That's not your job either. We are communicators, not rescuers. Don't adopt the rescuer mentality. Because if you're a rescuer, you are going to be attracted to the dogs and the pigs in your life. Because this is the feeling that if I just stay in there long enough, I'm going to change their heart. God is the only one that can change their heart. They have free will. And I know this doesn't sound like a teaching from God at first. This is kind of hard knocks. Might even sound unloving, but it's really not. And this type of, you know, this type of decision, don't get me wrong here, you know, does not come lightly. Don't hear me saying that. You know, it's not like after this meeting, I'm going to go up to someone, you dog, get out of my life, right? There should be a lot of thought into this, a lot of urging and persuading and going on, forbearing, a lot of counsel. But if there's no change of heart, Jesus is saying right here, cut your losses, move forward before you're torn to pieces, before you waste your time. Now, the last section that we're going to read is cool as well. Kind of ties right on. This is Jesus, I feel, anticipating a question that we might be asking ourselves right now. How do we actually do this? Right? I mean, you read through this, it seems fine and dandy. You know, it might have been some things that you might have to think through there, but it kind of makes sense. Evaluating relationships, that makes sense. Positive relating versus negative relating. You know, thinking, you know, before popping off in judgment. Getting rid of dead weight, the pigs and the dogs in your life, that kind of stuff. You know, but most of us are probably thinking to ourselves, you know what, you just don't know me, God. I'm set in my ways. My normal mode of relating is negative. I'm quick to judge. I'm that condemning person in the way I relate to people. I have a hard time dealing with those people or that person. You don't know my spouse, God. And I hope we're not in that boat. And by the way, God knows everything, so I'm just using that lightly, right? He knows your heart. He's the one that does know your heart, right? But what it comes down to is by what power are we going to accomplish these commands by Jesus? Well, Jesus anticipates this, I think, this inner question that we may be feeling. He gives us this riddle to consider. He says, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Now, many people, maybe even some of us here, when we see a passage like this, we immediately think of salvation passage, right? You know, we see the words knock and we see the words door and seek and we jump to that conclusion. But it's really not. And if you don't see it, I'll explain it more here in a second, but it's really out of context if we view it that way. And some of the confusion could be this, because we get it mixed up with a verse like this in Revelation 3:20. It says, here I am, I stand at the door and knock. And if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. But if you look at these two verses, there is a profound difference between these passages. Who's doing the knocking? In the Matthew passage, we're doing the knocking. In the Revelation passage, it's Jesus doing the knocking. This is a salvation passage, if you want to categorize, and it's an awesome promise by God here. You know, the Revelation passage is talking about Jesus standing at the door of our hearts and knocking. Every one of us, every human being that exists, he stands at the door and knocks, and he's asking us to open the door. And he says, if we do this, he's going to come in and dine with us and we with him. And we know through other teachings in the Bible that he's talking about an eternal meal, right? Meaning Jesus, you know, he desires to come into your heart and start a relationship that will never end if we just open the door. A precious pearl for sure. Probably the most precious, if you think about it, of all the pearls when it comes to God. And if you've never done this, if you're on the fence here, if you're in here and you're singing, you know, and you've never opened that door, what are you waiting for? Start your own pearl collection today with God. Ask him into your life. This is the biggest, baddest pearl you're going to get. I guarantee it, you will not be disappointed if you do it. So then what does the Matthew riddle mean then? Well, he explains it in the next couple verses 9 through 11. He says, which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? Well, this is a different type of argument structure than we may be used to. But it was very popular back in the day, back then, to emphasize a point, to make a point. And I'm not going to get deep into it today because, you know, we just don't have the time. But it is a very interesting study if you're into that kind of stuff, into ancient grammar and the way that, you know, the sentence structure. There's a lot of deep insight that you can get out of this because there's quite a few of these in Scripture. It's called a fortiori argument. But for today, I think this is pretty simple to follow for our purposes. He says, if you being a parent, being evil to the core compared to God, know how to give good gifts to your kids, and we do, right? Probably more than they deserve. How much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to you, his child, when you ask for them? That was the question, right? How do we do this? How do we relate to other people the way that we just learned today? How do we change the set in our way attitudes of our hearts? The self-righteous, the judgmental, the condemning heart. How do we relate to people in a positive manner, right? Positive reciprocity. How do we keep from judging and condemning and people self-righteously? And on the flip side, still judging and correcting them the way that God tells us to do by pulling the plank out of our own eye, right? Before you pull the speck out of your brother's eye. How do we discern? You know, how do we discern the dogs and the pigs in our lives, you know, versus the hard cases or the spiritually slow? You know, these are hard, hard calls sometimes. How do we do that? Well, let's just go back to verses 7 and 8 and look at that again. He says, ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be open to you. For everyone who asks, God receives. For the one who seeks, God finds. And to the one who knocks on God's door, the door will be open. He's not talking about salvation here. He's talking about provision. And he's talking about provision in a specific place here in our relationships. How do we deal with this? This is us knocking on God's door for help. After we become a child, after we have the relationship secure. This is teaching us to learn dependence on God for his provision in our daily lives. Pray, ask, seek his kingdom first, and things will be given to you. It's not going to be on your own power that you accomplish any of this, that you change your heart or change anybody else's heart. You know, the day-to-day grind, dealing with the different configuration of relationships that we're going to come up against. Only God can do that. And it's only through God that we're going to find any type of victory in any of our relationships, in anything that we do. But especially today, what we've been challenged with. So in everything, Matthew 7:12, the last verse, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. And so this is where we started, right, this morning. And when we see this or hear this in the future, hopefully it kicks a thought process. There are some process of principles to kind of think through that Jesus kind of hit on to get to this point in our personal relating, you know, to follow. This is a great lesson by Jesus, a very practical lesson by Jesus. And so hopefully we take that to heart. All right, that's it for that. First-time guest, anybody here for the first time? Welcome, obviously. We got a couple books up at the welcome table that we give away free. Just kind of visit with the person manning that, and you can get that for yourself. And when you came through the door today, they gave you a packet, and in that packet, there's a green card. And if you have any comments or concerns or questions or whatever, you want to fill that card out, put that on there. We're going to be passing around a bag that'll come by for us that called us our fellowship, which we can put our, you know, some money in if we want to. But if you're a guest here, we ask you to pass it on by. However, if you have the card that you filled out, you could put that in that bag. Then Oasis, which is our, you know, where we have the kids. We have the kids to 11:45. It says 10. The clocks have not changed. That's kind of odd. But anyway, 11:45, we have the kids still. So if we get done a little early, hang out, fellowship with some people, don't worry about it. We expect to have them till that time. And then we do a series of questions and comments, which allows you guys out here to make some comments. And what we do is we grab a microphone, we pass it around, raise your hand, we'll bring it out, and love to hear your comments. We'll start with that.
Thanks, Jeff. That bit about the dogs and the swine, you know, that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes. I think all of us started thinking about who are the time suckers in my life, right? And I think another good way to look at that, a good way to start with that is, am I one of those people? You know, am I super comfortable where I am and I don't want to move? I don't want to grow the way God would want me to grow. If someone came to me and offered to help teach me and help me to grow, would I be a waste of their time? Because I'm just so comfortable where I am. You know, I personally am very prone to complacency, and that's something I have to push against all the time because I can get real comfortable. And that's not what God, I'm not there yet, so clearly God has more growing for me to do. So I think that's something that we may want to think about is how... Am I one of those time suckers? Am I one of those people that just doesn't want to move?
Right, and has your feet stuck in the mud. And yeah, I didn't want to go that route. Sags. But yeah, it's self-reflective too. I mean, you know, we need to look at ourselves. And I think there are different times in our lives that sometimes we can sense that we're really engaged and moving forward, and you don't have to ask that question. But other times, you know, do I really want to do this, or do I really want to put more time into that or this? And I think the key, there's a couple keys there. One is, you know, if you're moving forward, that's important, right? If you're just stuck in the mud and you're deciding you're going to go out on your own and do your own thing and you're not going to, that becomes evident pretty quick. But I think it is self-reflective. I think it's a great question to ask yourself. Yeah, thanks.
That's a cool teaching. A word that stood out to me when you were talking is the word time. Came up, and it really did stand out. We spent 10 years, you and I, with me as an atheist, and you investing in my life for 10 years before I received Christ. I met a guy 6 years ago. I spoke to him for 40 minutes while I was washing my car. I was reminded of this a few weeks ago, and he received Christ. I know your teaching isn't completely about salvation, but the word time, when we're looking at relationships, how do you know the time? You just put it, this big bubble that covers everything and say, okay, everyone has 5 years or 10 years or 40 minutes. What is time and how do you know it? How do you know when God's saying you invested enough time in her, you invested enough time in him, or... You need to spend 20 years. I've got a neighbor across the street moving to Texas this summer, and I'm continually talking to him. Am I wasting my time?
Well, that's a great question, right? And what it comes down to is whether you have a good relationship with somebody, whether you have a strained relationship, or you have a bad relationship with somebody, it's still a relationship that you have, right? Even if you deem somebody today as somebody that's, and to continue with the terms, the pig or the dog, if you deem them that person, people not tramping under feet, you don't want to waste a lot of time with them. But that doesn't mean you want to sever that relationship completely, right? Because people go through changes in their life. And when they go through changes in their life and they know what you're about, you'd be surprised how quick they'll pick up that phone and say, hey, I need to talk. And you don't want to just say, no, I don't want to talk to you because of past experiences, right? Go and hear what they have to say. And sometimes their heart has changed and their heart is open to what God's saying now, right? So you never want to sever a relationship to where you want to burn the bridge and say, get away forever. But as far as investing a lot of time into somebody that's just tramping under feet what you're saying, that's when it becomes a problem, because that could be used more productively on somebody else that's open right now. And so that's a good clarification. Thanks. You guys aren't fighting for the mic?
There will be no fighting. I appreciate that clarification, because I was sitting here going, huh, because I have a couple of relationships that are like that, that I have, you know, maybe brought up some spiritual conversation and been like, bam, shut down. But they're still my friend, you know, and for me to be just like, that's so-and-so, not answering that because we're done, I couldn't see how that would be something that, or how you would do that. But what also helps, and I notice, is either I'm praying before I go to get together with them, or I don't. And you're right, it's just a superficial, you know, we kind of have deep conversations, but not so much. But if you, to me, ask God to give you an open door, hang in there, listen to what they're saying, and just be his light in their life, I find that helpful or not. So anyway, I just wanted to say thanks for clarifying that. So,
all right. Yeah, I mean, by no means. I mean, it's a hard teaching. I mean, that particular part of the teaching today, it's not something that we usually talk about openly in a group, because it just doesn't sound like God. But it's real. It's reality. We have time. We only have a certain amount of time. And so we got to choose wisely, and we got to be discerning about that. But I think it's very important. Don't hear me saying that you're just cutting relationships and ending it for forever. All you're doing is investing your time more wisely in people that are more open presently.
Hi. It's kind of comforting to know that that Jesus is the one who's knocking your door, like Revelation 3:20 says, rather than us trying to, you know, be the rescuer, you know, that mentality. And so that really clarified for me is that I like the fact that we're not the one that is going to, you know, have this person to come to Christ. And so as us becoming communicator, we need to be wise, like you said, when and not to continue. I don't know, you know, but I think God showed us love first, and we need to relate that to others.
Right. And well, and again, you know, communicator is a good term, but it can also be calloused term. It's communicating with love, communicating God's love. You know, it's not about you saving somebody. It's about what God says about that person. So it's in love. And so very important distinction when you hear that word communicate. When I said that, it has the surrounding aspects of love, patience, kindness, all that stuff that God brings up in the Bible.
Hi, I appreciate what you said about not carrying the burden of responsibility for change in someone's life. And I think that, you know, I totally agree. Prayer is the most important part of a relationship. It's the most important part of the relationship that we have with God, because that is the relationship with Him. but it's also the important part of the relationship with other people. And inviting God to be a part of every relationship that you have with someone else opens a lot of doors to being a communicator of truth. And the other thing that I think is important is to always pray that God goes before you in whatever that you do. If you feel called or convicted by God to talk, to speak the truth to someone, to share the word, it doesn't do you any good to go on your own, because it's his word that you're sharing. And so I think that, you know, if we invite God to go before us and to prepare their heart and to let the Holy Spirit be softening and molding and putting the questions in their mind and in their heart, a lot of times the conversation that God leads will be really more life-changing and more open, and less where you are being a rescuer, which I totally agree with you. We have no right to rescue anyone. That's not our place. That's the Holy Spirit and God's place. But to be there when he's rescuing someone, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I love the way you put that, because it kind of tied in some things there in that, you know, getting before God before you're talking to people. Sometimes, you know, it's not about pulling the speck out of someone's eye. It's about communicating God's word. And a lot of times that'll come off as self-righteous and judgmental, because you go and do that on your own behalf, as opposed to stopping, talking to God, getting him involved in that conversation, in that relationship up front. And then that, a lot of times, gives you the open door that you were talking about. I love that comment. Thanks.
I really liked what you said about getting the log or the plank out of your own eye before you go to your brother. And you said that when you take the time to assess your own sin or hypocrisy or self-righteousness, whatever it is, that fosters humility in you. And I think that has the ability then to help you go to somebody out of love for them. If you think, I'm just one sinner trying to help another sinner get freedom here or whatever, it just changes your whole lens on, you know, what might be going on with somebody else when you recognize I'm at the foot of the cross too. You know, so I really liked that you pointed that out about the humility that brings when you take the time to get the plank out your own eye.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And appreciate the comment. But, you know, it's the difference between pointing your finger at somebody and telling them they're doing wrong, as opposed to getting alongside them and saying, you know, I'm just, you know, I have the same issues or some of the similar issues, and I want to be on the same side of this with you to help you get through that. I mean, it's just a totally different paradigm. Thanks. All right. Well, thanks for all the comments. And we've got a few minutes. Take a couple minutes to pray. We'll do the same routine. If you have want to pray, lift your hand, and we'll get you the mic, and I'll close it up.